Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show, where business owners, professionals, and entrepreneurs gather to discover playmaking ideas for success. Your host is internationally recognized speaker, facilitator, and author, Steve Klein, who sits down with fascinating playmakers who have made themselves and their company successful. Steve will introduce you to CEOs and executives who discuss their playmaking path toward success. And now, it's time to meet this show's playmaker. Here's your host, Steve Klein.
Ralph Waldo Emerson said, "The desire of gold is not for gold, it is for the means of freedom." Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show. I'm Steve Klein. In the studio today is a guest who gives his customers the means of freedom. Today's Playmaker has surpassed $3 billion in total sales in just over 8 years of business. With us today is a CEO whose company was ranked number 96 within the top 500 online businesses. This great playmaker is Michael Whitmire. Mike is CEO of JM Bullion. Now, JM Bullion is one of the largest online retailers of physical gold and silver investment products in the world. Mike co-founded JM Bullion in a basement in 2011 and has since scaled the company to annual revenues approaching $1.3 billion. Customers can select between thousands of different gold, silver, platinum, and palladium bars and coins, complete a simple online checkout, and have products quickly and discreetly shipped directly to their door. JMB allows individuals to take control of their investments and secure their wealth with hard assets in their possession. JM Bullion offers physical delivery of over 2,000 unique precious metal products at the lowest possible premiums. Well, Mike, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Thanks for having me.
You know, this is really interesting. I have lots of questions I want to ask you about this. And during this time of pandemic, there's been a lot going on, people talking about precious metals and bullions. But you began this business 8 years ago, and you knew nothing about it. Why?
So starting at the beginning, in high school, I actually started my first business, which was an affiliate marketing venture in the online gambling space. So I was into playing poker. This is when poker was on ESPN all the time and it was kind of booming. I wasn't very good at poker, so I was losing all of my money playing online. And one day I saw on one of the websites I played on, there was a refer a friend area. And I looked at that and I learned that they would pay you, it was like $100 per person if you referred someone in, they deposited and started playing. So my first idea was I got all my buddies to sign up and got like $800 for referring, you know, 8 of them to the site. And then the next iteration of that was I was also always interested in websites and the internet and computers. And I thought, you know, if I build a website that could drive people to play at these sites and they use my referral code, then I could, you know, refer not only people I know, but anyone who's trying to play online. So I started that when I was 16. And built about 20 different websites and learned a lot about this over the next 3 years. Sold that company when I was, I believe, 19. And the next venture I ended up in was doing affiliate marketing in the gold and silver space. Someone I knew from the gambling world was helping one of our now competitors actually launch an affiliate program and said to me, "Hey, you should look at this. It's a really hot market." This was around 2011 when gold was hitting what was then an all-time high, which we broke last Friday. So I knew nothing about it and thought, hey, I can get a website to rank for, you know, buy gold or buy silver in Google. I can refer people to this site where they can actually buy and they'll pay me commissions. So started that in early 2011 and built that and grew it and got it to the point where we had enough traffic that we thought, you know, hey, why don't we just try this ourselves? And like you said, I knew nothing about, you know, bullion or coins or anything like that, but I felt like it was going to be much easier to learn about that side of the business, and we felt like all the current players in that market were coin dealers who were trying to figure out how the internet works, and we thought it'd be much easier to go the other way. So started JM in November of 2011, and it's been a long road to here, but kind of brick by brick, we've grown it to the position we're in now.
I'm looking at a graph I believe I saw in the Dallas Business Journal. After a small dip, your revenue began to rise, and I'm looking at almost 10 years ago when you began, and it started slowly, and then it just took off about 2 years later. A couple of things hit about that time. One is you were in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and one of the questions is why, I believe, is because you were going to school at that point, but you can tell me why in a moment. And you decided that Dallas was the new location for you. So tell us about why Lancaster and then why you picked Dallas.
Yeah, so I actually, when we first started, I had a co-founder who, he was in Lancaster and he was from there. And the original idea was we had partnered on those affiliate websites first. And then when we decided we were going to go into e-commerce proper, I was going to focus on the digital side. I was living in Chicago at the time. And he was going to actually handle the, what I'll call the physical operations of the company. Inventory, answering customer service calls, shipping orders, that piece. So he started that in Lancaster. And as it started to grow, I wanted to become more involved. And I actually moved from Chicago to Lancaster to get involved with the business. Shortly after that, he ended up moving on. He's still a small owner of the company, but he hasn't worked here for a while. I took the CEO title and kind of looked around in Lancaster, and I'm not sure if you're familiar with that area, but it's Amish country. So we're trying to grow and hire, you know, web developers, traders, roles that just don't really exist there. And we were really struggling to recruit people. Pennsylvania also had fairly substantial corporate income tax. I believe it was 9.9% at the time. And I thought to myself, what am I doing here? You know, I'm not from here. I don't know anyone here. We're having trouble hiring. We're still small enough that we could move the company. It wasn't easy, but I think we had about 12 employees then. So when we looked around to, hey, where would we want to take this thing if we moved? Texas was high on our list because of no state corporate income tax. There's actually a lot of the bullion suppliers are in Texas and even particularly in Dallas. So we felt like, you know, we would know some people there. We'd have a network. Our suppliers were close by. So we decided to make that move, and that was, I believe, in early 2014, we relocated down here. It's worked out fantastic for us. We've found some really amazing people to work here. We've saved, you know, a fortune not paying state corporate income tax, and I've personally enjoyed it as well.
Now, as a coincidence, as I look on your graph here, about that time, your business took a real rise. Did moving here have that much of an impact?
It wasn't particularly moving to Dallas. I would say some of the talent we were able to find here definitely helped us deal with that growth and scale. That's one thing we were really struggling with in Lancaster. Another piece of that is when we were in Lancaster, we were running our own fulfillment center in-house, and we just couldn't get the thing to scale. We could never get past about 500 orders per day capacity, and that was mostly a facility limitation, and we didn't have the right leadership. We outsourced that to a third-party logistics provider who's still managing that for us today. And once we did that, that not only made the move easier because we weren't trying to move a, you know, a precious metals vault, but also it allowed us to really scale that capacity and feel like our fulfillment was able to catch up to our marketing, which was really exploding.
As you mentioned, you really don't have a lot of control because the demand for your product has to do with a lot of political or events worldwide that are going on. But one of the things you've done that you do have control on is you've created an Amazon-like experience for purchasing precious metals. So you're doing more things to get people to buy. How did that hit you? Why did you begin to do that?
I think part of it was just my background and upbringing, that I was very into the internet and technology and computers and websites, and I was a customer of Amazon, and I just didn't know anything else because of pretty much my age. That was just how I had grown up seeing the world. So when I looked at this industry, and at the time when we started, the number two player in this industry, they were doing about $600 million a year. You couldn't buy online. You had to actually call them or fax them an order, and then they would ship sort of whenever they got around to it. That could be weeks, that could be months. They actually eventually went bankrupt. And it seemed like a horrible customer experience to me. And I was thinking, that why would people want to do this? So we took the approach of, let's just make this as easy as possible for the customer. Early on, that required us to sacrifice some margin and make some, you know, capital investments and kind of focus more on the long term than the short term bottom line. But it ultimately paid off and allowed us to grow quite a bit while the market sort of lagged behind us. They've basically copied pretty much everything we did by now, but we had a few years where we were the only ones doing a lot of these things, and that allowed us to kind of get our footing and grow.
One of the playmaking things that you did do along with this, speaking of customer service, was to offer free shipping. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, that was unheard of in your business. What kind of impact did that have on your business once you offered that?
Yeah, it was enormous. So when we started, that was one of the things that kind of boggled our mind, is every single website would charge for shipping no matter how much they bought. And in fact, they would actually charge more if you bought more. And they were viewing this through the lens of, well, the more someone buys, the more the freight expense is, so we have to pass that on to the customer. And it wasn't even a thing that was thought of. Like, customers had just accepted, you know, when you buy metals online, you pay these high shipping and insurance fees. So the approach we took to it wasn't to just eat that, because we couldn't afford to. Margins are very slim in this industry, and shipping costs are high. So we couldn't afford to just say, hey, we're going to eat this. So what we did is we made a strategy decision of, we're actually going to increase our prices to offset the hit of providing free shipping and insurance. And our hypothesis was, well, this has worked in every other industry that exists online, and it should work here. It's really a psychological thing for the customer that when you have filled out a cart and you're excited about placing an order, and then you get to checkout and all of a sudden you're hit with this fee that you had never even thought about, it just leaves a bad taste in your mouth and it hurts conversion. And it did exactly what we thought. We saw a huge increase in conversion rates, huge increase in new customer acquisition. And for whatever reason, our competitors didn't latch on to that it was over a year. No one even tested it for over a year. And throughout that year, we really grew like crazy, and that was a big driver of that growth you're seeing on that graph.
We're speaking with Michael Whitmire. Michael is CEO of JM Bullion, and I recommend you definitely go to their website, jmbullion.com, and it'll give you a chance to see, if nothing else, some beautiful coins that we were talking about before the show started. And if you are interested in anything numismatic or coin-wise, you'll have a fun day looking at that and ordering from JM Bullion. Why do customers invest in your products?
So a variety of reasons. I would say right now we're seeing sort of a confluence of events that all lead people to want to buy precious metals. So as an example, the coronavirus pandemic, it's caused a lot of fear, not only in people's minds, but in financial markets. In late March, we saw U.S. equities sell off 25-30%. And we've seen that this year. Gold has ran from $1,500 to, we hit an all-time high last Friday of just under $2,000. So people think that, you know, gold is going to serve as a store of value, and if the rest of their portfolio is kind of taking it on the chin, their gold investments should offset that. The other piece of that is gold tends to perform really well in an inflationary environment. There's only so much gold in the world. It's priced in dollars. And right now, the Federal Reserve, as well as the federal government, are creating a lot of new dollars to either pump out through stimulus programs, or the Fed is starting to, you know, directly buy corporate bonds lately. There's a lot of just newly created money that's being injected into the system. And when people think that's going to lead to inflation, they tend to look to gold as something that will protect their purchasing power if the dollar does erode. So those two, I would say, are the biggest pieces this year that are driving it. The other piece is, like you said, these products, I mean, they really are beautiful. And if you have to put your money, if you want an exposure to gold prices and you're choosing between an ETF that you just buy in your Fidelity account and, you know, it just kind of sits there, you know, that's a little more boring than actually being able to receive this, you know, stunning coin in the mail that you can keep at home and, you know, look at it, something you can pass down to your children someday. You know, it just has more of a nice feel to it to be able to hold that in your hand.
Well, one thing you also do is you repurchase or can repurchase products from clients. Tell us how that works.
Yeah, so we felt that was really important, that if someone's going to buy from us and they're viewing this as an investment, that they have a really easy way to gain liquidity if, you know, they're up or maybe they just need money for something else. So we offer what we call a buyback program, where customers previously could call us and tell us, you know, hey, here's what I have, or just look at this order number, I bought it from you, and we would quote them, here's what we can pay for those right now. We'll give them a UPS label. UPS will actually come pick the products up at their house. They'll ship to us. We'll authenticate them, and we'll pay them. As of this morning, actually, we now allow customers to do that fully online. So if you've bought from us before, you can go online, find your products, the current bids for them, add them to sort of a reverse cart where you're selling and not buying, complete that checkout, receive the label, send the metal to us, and receive funds pretty timely.
This seems as easy as going to any website on the internet and buying something or selling something, if not easier. But you've also developed you're putting together a new distribution center. As we were talking about that before the show started, this is fascinating. Give us a little background about that.
Yeah, so we've used this third-party logistics company for about 6 years now. It was kind of coincided with when we moved to Dallas. And it really helped us scale when the organization was in a place where we had some really good strengths, and those were primarily around getting customers to the website and converting them to buyers. we also had some weaknesses where our organization wasn't really set up for, you know, logistics and moving metal and kind of the hard piece of this business in my eyes. Now we've gotten to a point where we feel we can do that at a really high level. We've hired a lot of people that have experience in that and are excited about, you know, bringing that back in-house. The main reason we're doing that is just to have complete control over the supply chain and the process of getting metal in customers' hands. One thing that's been a little frustrating for us this year is as our volumes have exploded, we've really been pushing that 3PL to increase capacity so we can keep up on shipping orders. And the incentives just aren't really aligned. You know, if this facility was in Dallas right now, I mean, I would personally go pack boxes myself before I would let customer orders be late. But because it's in Las Vegas and we don't have control over it, you know, we're almost at their mercy of, are they going to scale up as quickly as we like? You know, even if we're trying to throw money at the problem, someone else is still ultimately in charge of how they're going to staff that facility and operate that facility. So we want the scalability. The other piece is these products, in my mind, just don't really work well at a 3PL because, as an example, last year we bought back over $200 million worth of products from our customers. Those come in all states of condition. So some coins, they've never taken them out of the package and they're ready to be resold. They're beautiful. They're just like they're brand new. Some of them, the customers have taken them out. They've, you know, touched them, passed them around. Maybe they've tarnished a little bit. And right now, this 3PL isn't really set up well to distinguish between that and have a great receiving process that not only authenticates the products, but puts them into the correct end SKU. And that's caused a little hassle for us where someone will buy something from us and receive a product that they don't think is the right quality. And we feel sort of helpless that, you know, we don't have control over that process. So it's really a control thing that we want to, you know, ensure that the customer is getting the absolute best experience because we're controlling it from the time we receive metal until the time they open the box at the door.
Again, your business is built more less on the product itself and more on how you're taking care of the customer. You said you grew up with that as you knew about Amazon. Have you gotten deeper into that as your business has gone along?
Absolutely. So we try to follow their model of view everything you're doing through the lens of the customer. So, you know, we'll have ideas here that someone will bring up and it may result in efficiency for the business and it may save money. But if it's something that, you know, wouldn't be great for the customer or may cause it to take longer or not be as seamless of an experience, we're not going to pursue that. So we've always felt like if we do right by the customer, we'll continue to grow. You know, the profits will follow, and it's really been instilled in our business here. I just hired a new chief operating officer who his whole mission is to view this business through the lens of the consumer and figure out, you know, which areas do we need to bolster, which areas do we need to improve, and actually execute on those pieces.
So as a customer of yours, of JM Bullion, should I have a problem, your effort is to do whatever you possibly can to make sure I'm 100% satisfied.
Absolutely. A good example of that, one big challenge we've had this year is the carriers who deliver our packages, UPS, USPS, FedEx, because of coronavirus, they've actually modified their signature policies. So in the past, anything we shipped over $1,000, the customer had to sign for it at the time of delivery. And that prevents loss. That ensures that, you know, they're actually delivering it to the door and not leaving it on a doorstep. Through this pandemic, they've modified their protocols to where they're just supposed to make contact with a customer. That could be through a window. That could be, you know, talking through an intercom. And then they'll actually input the customer's initials into their little terminal to indicate they've made contact with the customer. Believe it or not, they don't really adhere to that process. They already know the customer's initials because it's on the package. So we've had several instances where, I mean, packages up to $100,000 have been left out on a sidewalk. And we even had one that got stolen that we actually had to pay that out of pocket. You know, that was something our insurance company wasn't going to cover because the carrier didn't do what they were supposed to do. We had a customer who it was pretty much their life savings they had put into this. And we ultimately made the decision that it was more important to make that customer whole than to, you know, keep that $100,000. So we paid that out of pocket.
Well, eating profits sometimes hurts a little bit, but that takes you a long way in taking care of that customer. One of the things I'd asked you about before the show started was some best advice to business owners and entrepreneurs, and you simply wrote blind perseverance. That's the subject I want to ask you about. So tell us in your mind what that means.
At the simplest level, I think that means continuing down a path when every fact points you the other way. You know, that's a lot of what an entrepreneur does is when you're starting, you know, things don't look good a lot of the time, and you're going to face a lot of resistance and a lot of hurdles, and there's going to be times where pretty much everyone's going to tell you, you know, you should just pursue something else, or, you know, it's not a failure to quit, you know, that sort of thing. And sometimes that's right, but oftentimes, like for me, if I had given up when we had really difficult times, I wouldn't be in the position I'm in now. So it's sometimes you just have to ignore all that, set all of it aside, and just every day continue to do this, even though it may not make sense and it may feel like you're never, ever going to get out of this hole. And what am I doing with my life? But you just have to believe that and keep going with it. And you'll read similar stories from, I mean, pretty much every great entrepreneur will have some story where they were an inch away from their company's death and just ignored everything that it looked like was happening and just kept going. So I think that's, you know, I don't really have any silver bullet for how to build a successful business. It's a lot of hard work. And I think persistence is one thing that separates people who, you know, pack it in versus the people who ultimately make it.
So what you're saying is that if you stick with it long enough, some success will come out of that.
I don't think it's a guarantee of success, but giving up is a guarantee of failure. So you have to make it over that hurdle. There's a lot of other ingredients you need too. You need a, you know, a business model that makes sense. You need to be willing to put in the hard work. But if you're not willing to endure through what are guaranteed to be difficult times starting a company, I don't know anyone who's ever told me I started a business and from day one till now it was just smooth sailing. So you have to be willing to make it through that.
What's next for JM Bullion? Where do you go from here?
So this distribution center is kind of our core focus for this year. It's a pretty big project between the actual physical infrastructure. We're going to have to hire about 40 new people here in the Dallas market and train them. And also the software component of standing up a new warehouse management system. So my focus right now is really on getting through that. Going forward into next year, we're trying to find strategic M&A opportunities. We've done two deals the past few years that both worked out really well for us, and we think that we have a good eye for complementary business models within our space that can help JM continue to grow. It helps us grow even when the market isn't great because, you know, if the stock market does phenomenally next year and there's a coronavirus vaccine and, you know, basically all the things that have made this year be huge for us flip next year, M&A is one way that we can continue to grow even if, you know, we have some headwinds in the market.
Well, how would customers or potential customers get a hold of you then?
Yeah, so easiest way is come to our website, jmbullion.com. You can not only see all of our products, there's easy methods to get in touch with us either through email, live chat, or calling our toll-free number. We also offer an investor's guide on the website that will give you sort of the background on why people purchase these products, which of our catalog might be right for you, and how you should be thinking about an investment into gold and silver. We try to take a very low or no pressure approach to this. We're not going to twist somebody's arm to purchase metals. We just try to give them all the information they need and let them make an educated decision. So our website would be the best way to do that.
So what I heard from that is you're doing whatever you can to help make sure the customer is making the right decision should they purchase from you.
Absolutely. And I think that's in contrast to some companies in our space that take a more bottom line oriented approach of, you know, if I can sell one coin that's higher margin than the other, I'm always going to push the customer to do that, even if it's not right for them.
Well, Michael, this has been a terrific interview, a terrific segment on what it takes to not only sell bullion, but also take care of a customer. Thank you very much for being a part of Playmakers Talk Show.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
We've just spoken to Michael Whitmire. Michael is CEO of JM Bullion. Thank you to Mike for being a Playmaker. It's great having him on the show, and thank you to all of you for listening and joining us. Join us again at PlaymakersTalkShow.com, where you get all of our past episodes. That's PlaymakersTalkShow.com, and we're going to be back with more Playmakers. See you then.
You've been listening to Playmakers Talk Show with Steve Klein. Join Steve again at PlaymakersTalkShow.com for more interviews with interesting and successful playmaking CEOs and executives.